This is Greenhorns Radio. This is Severin speaking. It is 4 o'clock on Thursday afternoon. This is... Oh. Hello, this is Severin, and this is Greenhorns Radio. Welcome to the show. This is 4 o'clock on Thursdays at Heritage Radio Network. We are sponsored by Hearst Family Ranch. Thank you, Hearst Family Ranch. And thank you, Meg. I'm joined by Meg Gardner on the phone from Vermont. Meg, are you there?
I'm here.
Hi, Meg.
How's it going?
It's going good. We've been having a lot of rain. How about you?
Yeah, we've been having a ton of rain. I just came in from picking and harvesting a whole bunch of veggies from our field, and it's pretty muddy out there.
Well, thanks so much
Things
for joining us
to be
today.
Going.
And
okay.
I'd love it if you could start out with who you are and what you grow and where you grow it.
Okay, you're cutting out a little bit, but that's okay.
I live in Craftsbury, Vermont,
on an organic vegetable farm called Pete's Greens, and I live here with Pete, and him and I are partners here, and we run this four-season organic vegetable operation. You want me to talk a little bit about where I grew up?
Yeah.
Or a little bit more about the farm here first?
So where did you grow up, Meg?
I grew up in East Montpelier, Vermont, which is about 40 minutes from where I live now. And I grew up on an organic dairy farm. And my dad is currently the second or third largest organic dairy farm in Vermont now. And he milks a little over 200 cows. So I grew up pretty much milking cows and doing a lot of chores, and my summers were full of haying, but there's a lot of playing there too. It's kind of the farm life. It's work and play all mixed together there.
Is your father scandalized that you fell in love with a vegetable farmer and not a dairy farmer?
That's a good question. I think he's handling it okay. He has four daughters, and I am the oldest of the four girls, and I don't know if any of us are, I'm certainly not, and I don't know if any of my three younger sisters are interested in taking over the dairy farm that he's created. Yeah, I think he's a little disappointed, but we have a lot of fun comparing stories, and it's kind of fun that we're each doing our own thing and both still farming. And yeah, I mean, it's interesting. A couple years ago, I was really interested in growing vegetables on his dairy land, and he was not into it. He was like, "You're not going to make any money growing vegetables. I need this land for my cows." And I was like, "I really want to do this, Dad. This is the best way for me to be able to start off farming." And, yeah, so that just didn't work. But now it's kind of funny because I've joined Pete here, and my dad's all about me growing on his land now. He's like, "I really want you to grow vegetables here. It'd be a great opportunity." And it's like, there's just no way I can be in both places at once. But he's actually looking for somebody who might be interested in growing on his land and selling with him, creating a nice little farm stand. And, I mean, there's even potential for a CSA and another CSA in the Montpelier area.
Wow, that sounds like a great opportunity for someone.
Huh?
That sounds like a really great opportunity. I can't hear you very well, so keep talking really loud.
Okay, yeah, and you keep cutting out too, so.
Okay, cool. So we'll just both try hard. We're both the connections in rural areas are not so good for radio. So we have to tell Obama that we need rural phone lines to be improved.
Okay, and we can yell into the phone at the same time.
Yeah.
Okay, that sounds good.
Tell me and our audience, if you would, a little bit, please, about the state of dairy in Vermont right now and nationally, what's going on, and any insight that you have from your dad about why the price of dairy has fallen so low.
Well, I think there's a few different reasons why the price has fallen. I mean, a couple years ago, in terms of organic, we had an influx of people. The price had dropped so low on conventional milk that many, many, many farmers were transitioning into organic. And at that point in time, there was actually so many people that were transitioning, these large commercial organic milk companies did not have the capacity to take on all these new farms. So these new farms ended up getting put on waiting lists, and as the space opened, they would then be allowed to sell their milk, say, to like Horizon or Organic Valley. But during that time, these organic, now new organic operations were still getting conventional prices for their milk. So that, I think, started the whole thing where all of a sudden there was this huge influx of organic, there was a huge influx of organic milk. And then the economy kind of went to hell. And, I mean, I've heard different things because I've been talking to my dad a little bit about it, and he says that there actually isn't in a ridiculous abundance of milk. But I've heard from a lot of people now there's just this huge abundance of milk, and that's why the prices are so low. But I think that people are not willing to pay as much in general, and the actual sales have gone down. I mean, what's happening right now is the price of milk isn't actually dropping, say, for somebody like my dad. What they are doing, however, is they're forcing farmers to cut back on production, and that is causing a lot of problems. So it's kind of a way around the commercial milk companies. They're still upholding their contracts because they're not actually reducing the cost of the milk. They're just putting a restriction on how much can be shipped.
So the they in this case is the milk pool coordinator, so the
Correct.
Horizons or
Yes.
the Organic Valleys or other regional milk pools are
Yes.
cutting their quota, cutting is it a quota?
Yeah, it's a quota.
In an attempt to keep the prices stable.
Exactly.
Right.
You said it perfectly.
and the thing that's interesting is this is recently in Switzerland they nationalized a lot of the dairy processing. It's a company called Emmi.
Mm-hmm.
And there were major protests and farmers who were worried about losing control of their regional dairy pool. And in fact, then the price of milk went way down also.
Oh.
There's some research that we should be doing and learning about, you know, what is the dynamic of what is the dynamic that's at play here?
Yeah.
I know that then, you know, in response to that price drop, new regional dairies sprung up.
Mm-hmm.
Farmers, you know, taking initiative to reorganize themselves in smaller groups that are kind of more responsive to their needs and serve localer markets and particularly niche markets.
Yeah.
I know that there has been some dirty business in the kind of meta dairy world.
Yeah.
And there was recently a big stink because the guy who's representing the dairy association flew around in his jet airplane and was taking $1 million. I don't know. There are some scandals. Is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. I mean, I've really been encouraging my dad.
I think
here
that there's also
the
a lot of, I heard rumors from the cornucopia people that there's a lot of milk casein powder coming in and being used in like ice creams and things.
Oh, yeah.
And so the demand, the kind of processed food demand for milk is also going down. But these are a little bit unsubstantiated, so perhaps I should do some more research and talk about milk again.
Yeah.
Next week.
Yeah,
Actually,
cool.
We are doing that. We're going to talk about milk again next week. We're going to talk about raw milk next week.
Oh, super. Yeah, that's great. I was just going to mention a big thing in Vermont is we're really pushing for more and more raw milk to be, I mean, we're pushing for raw milk to be much more accessible to people, and a law was just passed within just a few months ago. A law was passed so that farmers can now sell 40 gallons of milk per day, and it can actually be of raw milk, and it can actually be delivered now as long as each of the people who are receiving the milk have visited the farm once, and also they have access to the farm whenever they want to go back and check it out. So that's been really cool because my dad's been selling a small amount of raw milk, but he's definitely considering trying to do a more direct-to-consumer sort of sales plan. And it's pretty exciting that even though, I mean, Vermont's been really tough with its raw milk laws, but it's great to see that it's moving forward. So I'm pretty psyched about that. And my dad's psyched about it, and I deliver milk currently, usually after our farmer's market. I just stop by my dad's and I pick up milk for people who love, you know, getting his milk, and it works really well because I'm just on my way home and any way to pretty much get it out there.
And the demand for raw milk is only growing.
There's definitely.
My friend, well, somebody that I heard about once is a courier in the Underground Milk Railroad.
Yeah.
And she said that in New York City people are paying $12 a gallon.
Damn, that's crazy.
Which is, yeah.
Whoa. Wow, yeah, it's $6 a gallon here. And, yeah, it's great milk. It's awesome. I mean, I'm so happy to see my friends and family. I mean, I was raised on raw milk, but it's great to see people are just, they want it. It's amazing. So, so we're pretty blessed.
Okay, well, let's talk about your, you know, another part of a complete diet beyond raw milk is raw and delicious green vegetables.
Yes.
Let's talk about what your business looks like and how it's. You just came on the scene slightly recently in that business. So maybe describe what it's like to join.
So I came here about 2 years ago, and I actually started seeing Pete, and I was actually living in a tent in the woods at the time because I have this thing about nature and just needing to put myself in the middle of it at certain points of my life just because it's fun. Even if I can live in a house and pay rent, it's just so nice to set up a snazzy little camp spot in the woods and hang out for a half a year and work. I would run businesses, but still my house would be operating out of the woods. And anyway, so I met Pete and I was in my tent and I was interested in moving to Hawaii and teaching yoga and farming there. And so that's what I was planning on doing at the time, and things kind of took off for us, and I ended up coming up to the farm one day, and it was in the middle of the night, and a bunch of the chickens were out, and we just went down there and put all the chickens in, and I was completely just at home. It was amazing. So I started working here really quickly, running crews and doing a lot of field work and harvesting. And, yeah, I mean, I totally fell in love with this place. I've always loved, I've done some vegetable farming in the past, but, yeah, I really fell in love with it. And I respect and appreciate dairy farming, but it's definitely, I've milked a lot of cows, and it's definitely not for me anymore. And growing vegetables has been perfect. And, so, yeah, I've been here, let's see, I was running our wash house for a while, which is where I would do all the picking and packing and washing and coordination of our wholesale accounts and our farmer's market, farm stand, and our 220-person CSA, picking, packing, washing, all that jazz for those areas of the farm. And I got out of the wash house about a year ago. And it was good because it's such a key part of the farm. It was really good for me to pretty much jump in there from the beginning because it's we worked so hard on the farm growing all this food, and the wash house is where everything comes through there, and it all needs to be executed. All those systems need to be executed very smoothly and efficiently, and yeah, it was really good for me to work in there for a while to get those systems down so that I can train other people now to do those. And, yeah, I got out of the wash house and really I wanted to be in the fields and the greenhouses and growing. And I was so lucky because I was coming into an established business. And have all these great opportunities now where I get to dive into something that's already been going on for 5 years and be able to just make it as, you know, just make it as good as I possibly can. And on the other side of that, though, I really miss the fact that I'm not, there's certain things here that, you know, I can't say I built from the ground up, but there's so much room for new things on this farm that I am really blessed with the opportunities here. So, yeah, I do a lot of management of the greenhouses and our farmers market and our farm stand. And I'm really involved with Good Eats, which is our 220-person CSA. And I pretty much co-manage the farm with Pete, and we're pretty much full-on partners here. We really focus on our direct-to-consumer sales. That's a real love of mine, is kind of establishing these great relationships with people. And I think that, I mean, the people are always going to be here, and I think that those are the most sustainable ways for a business to kind of thrive and support itself. And I also think it's the most sustainable way for people and consumers to get their products. And so that's been a really exciting challenge, is to boost our sales there, make it better, keep customers happy, offer more diversity. Yeah, so that's been good. And we grow a lot here, so the diversity is just, it keeps going and going and going, and we're trying out new things all the time. I feel like I'm a run-on sentence.
We have to take a station break for a moment and have some music and thank our sponsors, Hearst Ranch, Family Ranch, for their sponsorship of our show. And when we come back, I want to talk to you more about the place where your farm is located, Hardwick, Vermont, the epicenter of cool, and get your take on where that region is going. But for now, let's go for one little second to music, and soon we'll be back with more Greenhorns Radio. This is your host, Severin. And thank you for joining us.
Do you know the significance of life? Then why can't we all light? Stop all the fuss and fight and live it up right.
Severin, and this is Greenhorns Radio. I'm joined on the phone today by Meg Gardner. She is in Hardwick, Vermont,
Craftsbury.
The epicenter of cool, and working with Pete at Pete's Greens. And we're going to talk a little bit about Hardwick, Vermont. Tell me about Hardwick, Vermont, Meg.
So Hardwick, Vermont is this tiny little town in the Northeast Kingdom of Vermont. And more in the past year, pretty much, there is this group that has gotten together in Hardwick, and it's called the Center for an Agricultural Economy, and it is a group of different business owners from the area and the surrounding towns of Hardwick that all have some sort of agricultural or kind of food production, I guess not everybody's food production, but the composting businesses. It's a group of people who are pretty much focused on integrating, I guess, their businesses. Well, okay, what they're interested in is getting more people from the area involved in what's going on in terms of the agricultural practices and the food systems that are surrounding Hardwick. And there is, it's pretty incredible because there's some really amazing,
And how big is the town of Hardwick, just so we know, and how far away is it from
the town of Hardwick?
Other people
funny.
Might know
it
about?
Is, It's really, really small, and I used to actually go there when I was a little kid, and we'd go to, like, the funniest, you know, there's the sawdust mill, and, I mean, it's a tiny town that was not drawing a lot of people in, I would say, as of a couple years ago, but more recently, because of the businesses that are thriving around and in Hardwick, it's drawing more and more people in because of the opportunities there, and that's been kind of cool. And there's a lot of stuff happening around Hardwick right now that's not happening anywhere else in terms of there's this wonderful restaurant that opened up just over a year ago in Hardwick, and it's called Claire's, and they buy in almost completely local food from all these surrounding farms in the area and businesses and Vermont products. And in the dead of winter, this restaurant is serving over 80%, I think it's 83% local food, which is wild. I mean, and that's just bringing people, a really diverse group of people who are just curious about what's going on, into the area. And that's been pretty neat. So that's kind of, I mean, Claire's has been a really big hot spot of Hardwick. It's an awesome place to go and get a good cocktail or have a really good meal. They have something called Blunch in the morning. That's Sunday mornings, and that's really fun. And it's inexpensive, and it's local food. So that's kind of been neat because all these businesses in and outside of Hardwick can actually come to this place to see what their products are being made into and can also see people appreciating them in different ways. So that's pretty neat. But Hardwick has, I mean, it's got a real draw right now. A lot of people are, more and more people, I should say, are looking into moving there because of what's happening. There's a lot of new small businesses that are starting up, and it's definitely changing. Like, Hardwick is kind of becoming just a really hip little place to be.
It sure is a place to be, and we just had a Greenhorns Young Farmer Mixer there a couple weeks ago, and there were, I think, 76 young farmers there at the mixer, and overflowing all into Claire's, and everybody was dancing and getting pretty drunk, and it was really wonderful, and it felt almost like it was a community kitchen, like everybody coming together to eat there.
The scale
of Hardwick and the scale of what's going on there feels like
pretty
the scale
neat place.
Of what could go on in so many small towns around America.
Sorry, I might have missed that if there was a question.
I know, it's really hard to hear. I'm so sorry.
It's okay.
Let's just finish up and talk about what you think it will take for other towns around America to have the same kind of experience as you've seen in Hardwick. Like, what are the factors of success, and what might we look to, and what might other entrepreneurs look to as they walk down that path of rediscovering local enterprise and the new scale of business in America?
So I guess I would say in terms of like other, you mean like in terms of young farmers or just other farmers and producers, what would be some advice in like moving and kind of creating something similar?
Yeah, exactly. Young farmers, food entrepreneurs, ag business professionals, startup people.
One thing I would highly recommend is Pete, who I'm with here, Pete Johnson, and then Tom Stearns of High Mowing Seeds, a couple of years ago started a business owners group where everybody meets once a month in the evening time at one or the other person's business. I think there's like 20 people, 30 people in the group right now. But when it started, it was quite a bit smaller. I think it was, you know, maybe 8 people. And once a month, everybody goes to one person's business, and they have a little potluck, and then there is kind of a subject of the night. And it could be, you know, how to build your business, need help with your books, how do you go about getting the loans that you need, how do I deal with employees, or do I want employees, does it make sense? All sorts of different issues arise. So anyways, that, I think, has been, I started going to it with Pete just a little while ago, like a year and a half ago, and they've been, those meetings have been really helpful for me, because for one, you're seeing what these other businesses are doing or trying to start up or working on, and it's really open, great advice, and you're all kind of in the same boat in terms of, you might be having different operations or trying to start different operations, but you have to deal with some of the same issues. And so that's been neat because you're connecting with these potential new business owners or already existing business owners. It becomes this real support network. And through that support network, I think a lot of really positive things can happen, like, oh, hey, well, I heard about this piece of land that's somebody's leasing, and that's great. And then through another person in the group, well, there's the, you know, they might have the piece of equipment that you need to borrow if we're talking about agriculturally trying to do something. Or there's a lot of different connections that could be made there. So this business owners group, I think, has been a really cool idea and has been really beneficial to pretty much everyone in the group. And it's been made like a closed group now because you end up really opening yourself up to this group of people in terms of what's going on within your business and books and things like that. But it's also, I think there's so much goodness and so much opportunity that can come out of that, that I highly recommend people starting groups like that. Another thing is, I mean, I think one of the hardest things in terms of being a young farmer is accessibility to land and finding affordable land. And that is hard. I think that if you've got friends of the family or your family is you know, into farming and they've got the land, that's great, but that's not all of us. It's probably not even all that many of us. And I think leasing land is a really great way to go in the beginning. I think that if you can lease land for a couple of years, you can make a lot of money growing vegetables just off an acre of land. After doing that for a couple of years, being able to actually afford your own land is looking quite a bit clearer and more reasonable at that point. I'd also say, I was actually thinking about this last night, that it seems like there's a few places, I think there's many places around, where there's this need for a crop to be grown, but nobody really knows about it. So there's like 5 restaurants, and all they really want is white eggplant. And that's all they want, but they can't find it anywhere. And they'd be willing to pay a good amount of money for it, but they want to buy it locally. And I feel like there should be a place where these people can go and post what they're looking for so that these people who want to farm, who are interested in farming, can go and see what's out there instead of having to, like, jump right into the market, like, okay, I'm going to try to sell 50 different products this year, but instead can say, okay, this year I'm going to start with 2 products in this area that I know I already have a market for, and then from there be able to work into maybe what you personally want to grow or establish for yourself. So, but who knows, maybe there is a place like that, I don't really know.
Yeah, that's really good advice. And starting small and growing the business organically.
Yeah,
it makes a lot more sense than jumping in and then all your lettuce is ready and you got to go dashing around trying to sell it.
Yeah, I think that if you can connect with people who, I mean, I think it's really good to try to set up a market ahead of time, at least as much as you can. at least with a couple different products. Like, it's always good to have your cash crops. Like, you grow your lettuce and you grow all that, which is great, which you bring to your farmer's market, which brings people in, and they're always getting their, you know, $2 head of lettuce. But you've got to be able to have those cash crops that you know that's what's going to be able to sustain your farm, at least while it's starting up.
Well, and if they succeed and they become a farmer and things work out, is it a good life?
Yeah, it's a good life. It's pretty intense. It's, well, I love food. So, I mean, I'm crazy about food. I could spend hours a day cooking, but I don't have even close to that amount of time. It's a great life. I love the diversity of waking up every day and being able to go on these adventures. Like, what the heck am I going to do to solve this problem? And it's a lot of fun. But it's also working and living with your partner. There's definitely some struggles with balance and when are we not working and that kind of thing. But work is pretty fun, and work is life, and work is play a lot of times, but sometimes you have to take a break and remind yourself it's okay. Take a break. Go do something away from the farm. It'll be okay. But yeah, it's a great life. It's pretty amazing. I definitely love it. So,
well, Meg, thank you so much for joining us on the show today, and you keep working it. I'm really glad to have met you, and I hope to see you again soon. I've got a great a little plan to come back up to Vermont, and hopefully it will include a stopover to visit your farm stand and see how your green roof is going.
Awesome. Well, please.
And thank you
too.
To our audience for joining us again for Greenhorns Radio, and thank you to our sponsor, Hearst Ranch. Thank you for me, Severin. We are here, Smithereen Farm, greenhorns.net. Oh, Meg, let's make sure we say your website.
Oh, okay. It's peethgreens.com. And I'm Meg at Pete's Greens if you have any questions for me. Meg at PeteGreens.com.
Thank you very much, everybody.
Thanks,
talk
guys.
To you next
Take
week.
Care.
Bye.
Bye.